Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 65 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we are going to be catching up mostly on more of the 9.1 PTR stuff, talk a little bit about things like the raid testing getting canceled, as well as some of the other updates that came in. And there was an Ian interview that actually came out today that we are going to be talking about as well.
Yep.
But before we get into any of that, let's look at the other things that happened this week.
Sure thing. So we had it was actually a pretty eventful week for one that...
I feel like we say that like every week.
Yeah, it's true. I guess there's just a lot of stuff that happens in WoW. So a couple things did happen. So the first up is they did make a tuning pass of our good friend Sanguine Depths, with a bunch of just general, I think, nerfs across the board. A lot of them sitting in the trash area, but they did reduce the damage of Kahl's Wicked Gash for the final boss. And I think fixed an issue with
That thing trucks.
That bleed.
So the actual changes, so most of these, like you said, are changes to the trash, Dark Acolyte, Chamber Sentinels, the two big ones. They fixed the bug. I don't know if you heard about this, but the Venthyr canisters that you could use to get a buff were working with like the Jar of Spiders toy and things like that. So you could drop like a jar of spiders in one of those things and they just die on their own. And just like max out stacks of the Sinfall Boon buff that you get from that.
And I did not know that. That's pretty interesting.
So they fixed that this week. And then actually a really relevant one this week for tanks, Shining Radiance from the big glowy thing you pick up after the third boss removes all bleeds now, not just bleeds from Kahl.
Oh.
Notably, that includes necrotic. This is necrotic week, so that's actually a really nice change because it gives you a way to drop necrotic in the gauntlet, where before you would have just had to like sit there for 5 seconds and wait for it to fall off. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. That's actually a pretty big change for that because the gauntlet's like the worst part of that dungeon. So
being able to
change that, I think, is huge. So or mitigate some of the damage there, I think, is huge. So that's awesome. Cool. So running from there, so Sanguine updates. Next up was Wowhead did post a article on the new anima changes and basically, you know, how much is it worth getting certain upgrades, right, in terms of your anima consumption to do sort of individual things. So basically what they're saying is it generally depends on how far you're going to go to buy or purchase or sort of get items that require anima. Basically, they say, like, if you're trying to get everything, of course, you're going to upgrade everything for the maximum rewards. Right. However, you know, honestly, they say the minimum should just be get every building to rank one. And you should have enough anima to do pretty much whatever you want in time. So, I mean, it's sort of an interesting thing, but you can basically, they posted a bunch of sort of math and not math, but sort of breakpoints and things like that, where depending on what you want to do, if you add up all the anima that you you need, they'll basically tell you like how much you should upgrade, right? And the idea is they're using about 70 anima per activity, I think, in terms of all their calculations. So the idea is the reward, you know, eventually will outweigh the amount you spend in terms of like the speed of which of getting your upgrades or speed of which of getting the anima you need to purchase what you want. So
notably unlocking all the stuff at rank one pays for itself in 115 anima activities, like quotes there. That would be things like world quests and raid boss kills. And I went ahead, so I think it is also important to note that, like, you're probably going to want to upgrade at least two of the buildings to rank one anyway. The transport network that a lot of people just rush to rank three, mm-hmm. and then the command table are actually two of the four. And I don't see them accounting for that. So I guess it's like on a character that wouldn't have upgraded any of the buildings, it takes 115. Right. But if you're going to get your command table and your transport network anyway, then it's going to be half that many. And actually, I don't remember. Is this an account-wide upgrade?
It is. I don't actually know. I do not believe so. I believe it's individual character.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
As someone that switched covenants, this feels really bad.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten everything to rank one twice, and I just now got the achievement for it. And, this just feels really bad. And I'm going to be going back Night Fae relatively soon. Fingers crossed we re-kill Sired and Athreus tomorrow.
Oh.
And if we do, then I'm going back Night Fae tomorrow.
Nice. Yeah, I think I don't actually know. If it's account-wide, then it's okay for me since I had everything. I actually just switched to Kyrian also on my Paladin and had switched previously to Necrolord on my Monk. So similar boat where I think I only have everything at rank one because I just don't farm Anima.
Yeah.
And this is helpful. I know it helped. I mean, on the clear this week, we ended up getting, like, if you do a full clear,
it basically finishes your weekly.
Yeah, it's like 1500 anima, I think, now, at least with everything at rank one, which is just really good. So that's the anima updates, just some numbers to give you guys an idea of how much it might cost or what you want to put in.
I think the TLDR is, unless you are invested in, unless you're one of the people, and there are people like this in my guild that like do all of the anima dailies, then you're probably best off just getting things to rank one and then getting the specific building you care about to a higher rank, and then just buying the rewards you want with the bonus anima from that one extra rank. That's based on what that math says. That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, so I'll at least get to rank one. I'll probably end up eventually upgrading everything. I just like doing the mission table, I think, a little too much, so I put a lot of anima into that.
In terms of I still have not gotten my Kyrian table back to the point that it can do the level 60 Soul Ash missions.
I've never gotten a mission table that high, so maybe I don't like it.
I was Night Fae before, I was Night Fae before when you could just do the troop shenanigans and just like put four troops in there with literally anything. Like it could be a level one potato and it would complete the mission.
So funny. Yeah. I did not get that easy. I was Venthyr and Kyrian, so the two worst basically.
Yep.
Before all the changes. Yep. So cool, yeah, but that's on the anima rewards side of things. So next up is a little bit of a, I think, of a downer more than anything, is old Jeffrey Kaplan, or as his in-game name was Tiggle, is leaving Blizzard, or has left Blizzard, I guess you could say. Not as leaving, as left Blizzard. So Jeff is most notable. I mean, currently, if you're new to Blizzard as a company, he leads Overwatch. He's essentially the game designer, or lead designer, executive.
He was the director. Head honcho of Overwatch.
And yeah, game director.
A bunch of their game updates. If you've seen any of the hi, I'm Jeff Kaplan, and that's like his intro for all of the Overwatch updates. He did a bunch of them. He's spoken at BlizzCon numerous times about the game.
Yep.
And he at one point worked on World of Warcraft as well. He'd been there almost two decades.
Yeah. Yeah, so Jeff, long-standing member. I mean, like, if you've ever gone through Molten Core or have done Onyxia, you have done things that Jeff designed. He was game director of World of Warcraft for Wrath of Lich King. He stepped down basically the day after Wrath launched to start working on Titan, which was Blizzard's next-generation MMO, which they essentially scrapped, and the outcome of, or the assets and items out of Titan eventually became Overwatch, which, you know, Jeff was the game director there. So he's been there a while. As an old, like, as a person who's played WoW since the beginning, Jeff will always be known to me as really more of an EverQuest player than someone who played WoW, just because there's a letter that, if you just, you know, search Tiggle or Tiggle EverQuest, he basically wrote an open letter to the EverQuest developers. Basically, it would be like any sort of WoW forum post where someone just calls the developers idiots for doing what they're doing. basically Jeff wrote one of those to the EverQuest devs at the time.
In fairness to him, the EverQuest thing that he was writing about was really dumb, even by modern WoW standards. Like, we complain about a lot of WoW stuff on this show. No lie, we complain a lot.
Yeah.
The stuff that he was complaining about was, like, you needed 80 people to kill this raid boss and unlocked a new zone, but only 15 people were allowed in the zone at the time. So you just had, like, 80 people that collaborated to kill this boss, and then not even a quarter of them could actually get the reward for it
at the time.
It was peak. EverQuest was a different time.
Yeah. So that's where he came from. I didn't realize too, and I always forget about this, but Alex Afrasabi. Yeah, Afrasabi also was from the same EverQuest guild. And Alex was, you know, WoW, one of the lead designers on WoW for basically forever too. And so he had also left, I guess, earlier this year or in June, right? Or June last year. But yeah, losing Jeff's huge, I think, in terms of not only Blizzard, like not only Overwatch, right, because he was game director there, but I think in terms of like Blizzard old guard, like Jeff, other than like J. Allen Brack, who's of course like C president, I guess, of Blizzard.
He took over from Mike.
Took over from Mike Morhaime. Jeff's one of like the last old developers left, I think. From the original WoW group.
Unlike previous departures that we've talked about on this show, we don't know what he's doing next.
Yeah.
But of course, I think the entire community is watching Dreamhaven very closely
now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think I would say just about Jeff is Jeff was always, if you ever watch his Overwatch stuff, it's really cool because Jeff was always very open, which I think is the one difference we'll see in both the WoW, the way that WoW has sort of transitioned from a developer perspective as these folks leave, is that there's less openness in about what they're doing and what they're trying to do. Jeff's big thing was always, you know, be as open as you can. Ghostcrawler, who came after him as game director, was the same way, right? So that the idea is we sort of are losing that slightly with each one of these people. It becomes less and less of an open dialogue. And I think Ian is kind of trying to change that, but
yeah,
to be fair, it's not the same vein it was like back when some of these guys were running the show. So
yeah.
So sad to see Jeff leave. So next up, we have a quick one. Raid testing was canceled this week, so we have no updates. The build was giving a bunch of people crit errors as soon as you loaded in certain circumstances, so they could never get it.
Even if you did manage to load in, it would crash on you. Sometimes the loading screen, sometimes just running around Ouroboros. Raid testing was canceled because honestly, you're not going to get any useful information from that.
No. So we'll probably have a makeup day either this week or next week. So on that, I forget. It was two new bosses too. So
yep, I forget. It was two new bosses. I don't remember which two, but none of them were the final bosses. So
yeah, doesn't matter. Well, maybe it'll matter. Maybe there'll be cool fights in there. Final sort of recap of the week. Daisy the Sloth is now available for you to pick up. You can claim it for free. Daisy is, of course, the pet from the Doctors Without Borders fundraiser. Basically, if we as a community were able to donate $1 million in like the name of Doctors Without Borders and Blizzard, you got a cute little sloth pet that moves really slowly and also jumps on your back and you run around like a backpack. Yep. Which is
to make cool. A jump on your back, use the slash beckon emote on her. And she'll hop on your back. I saw a bunch of people asking in like zone chat, like, how do I do this? So the way you get this is just like with the other pet that was unlocked earlier this month. You go to the shop and you just search for Daisy. And it's in the shop, but it's free. So you just got to claim it there.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, that's the Daisy pet. It's actually really cool. She moves extremely slowly. Which is funny because she is a sloth, I guess, but it's cool that she'll jump on your back like a little backpack, run around. It's always a good time. So I think that's it for the recap this week. There's a couple PTR stuff which I think we'll talk about a little bit later, and the Ian interview we mentioned we'll touch on later because it does, I think, have some implications for the patch, and it just probably makes sense to talk about it there. So
yeah.
So a quick, I guess the one thing I wanted to talk about this week, which is sort of kind of, I guess, our big topic, and then we'll do like a little patch wrap up, and I added a lore corner too. We might skip there. Was the tier list that came out. So WoWhead posted a tier list for essentially the three major roles. So you have a tank tier list, a healer tier list, and then a DPS tier list. And they used essentially a letter ranking, so S through D ranks, and you could do pluses and minus on each of them. And basically S being, of course, valuable on every fight. You know, you have great throughput, survivability, whatever. You're just amazing. All the way down to D tier means like you can still do it, but
deeper don't.
Don't do it. Yeah. So
because you can, but deeper don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to talk. I mean, I don't know. Like here, my goal was really to sort of first talk about tier lists and why I think they're both a good and bad idea.
Okay. Actually, before we proceed,
yeah.
Important comment from the chat. So Abe says, if you have the magic pet mirror, you can use it on Daisy to become Daisy and then beckon Daisy so you can have Daisy riding on Daisy.
Really? Well, of course, Pet Master Abbe would know that. It's unbelievable.
Fun fact. Okay, now we can go back to the tier lists. That was just too important to miss.
That's funny. So tier lists. And I guess so my thoughts on them, I guess sort of how I feel about them is sort of a love-hate relationship, I'll say. So of course, being a WoWhead writer, I had to write one of these for Mistweaver Monk specifically, and I hate writing them. I think tier lists are they're almost like a necessary evil for almost any game nowadays in terms of like what they provide and what they're trying to do because they hit on the ability for a player or an individual, right, that's not maybe as close to something. To get an idea of maybe what they want to play, what they want to be strong at, and things like that. And then they also cause a lot of discussion and potentially, like, I'll say negativity, but in general, just, like, a lot of discussion around, like, the actual tier list itself by individuals who play the game a lot, right? And there's really that, those are the two camps, right? And it's the second camp that is, like, to me, I'm not going to say annoying, but it's always the camp that, like, I don't think the tier lists are ever written for them, right? They're sort of a discussion point, maybe a topic you talk about in a group, but like producing a list on a website like this is never for those type of individuals. Because like for me, I use tier lists, like if I play PoE or if I play, you know, Diablo 3 for this season, like I use a tier list to pick my build. Like I'm not going to say I've never used one of these before, but I don't debate like why I go a certain build in those games with like people on forums because like I don't know, so I'm just going to be like, yep, this sounds good, right?
Yeah. I think the difference there is that something like Diablo, like I know there's group content in Diablo and PoE, but they are primarily for 99% of people single player endeavors,
right?
Yeah. And so when you use a tier list to pick your build in one of those games, it doesn't matter to anyone else. Nobody is going to decline you from a group because they got the impression that your class sucks. Now, I will say, I don't think anybody's going to use one of these tier lists to do that in WoW either.
Yeah.
Because these, I would say, are reflective of the current community perception rather than like defining what the community perception is. Something like, well, if I pull up the healer tier list real quick as an example. One complaint I have about these is how the ranking scale is like incredibly compressed. Like people complain about video game rankings being like on a 7 to 10 scale.
Yeah.
These are basically on a B to S scale. Like technically C and D exist, but I don't think anything. I didn't look at the DPS tier list. Maybe there's a DPS that's like that, but none of the tanks or healers did. So this general ranking, though, matches exactly with community perception already. Like,
right.
This is exactly, like, if you asked me to rank the healers from a rating perspective, this is the list I would give you in order. Like, literally in order.
Right.
So I don't think this is actually going to influence like whether people get invited to groups. It might give people a scapegoat to be like, oh man, this tier list, that's why I am getting declined.
Exactly.
Probably not. You're probably getting declined because Mistweaver is kind of not. Like, if you get the choice between a Mistweaver and a Disc Priest, and you know they can both play the game, you take the Disc Priest every time.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and that's, I think that's the idea with some of these, is just like, there's no way to write one of these that doesn't, like, it should always mirror community perception anyway, I think. And the other side of this is like, there's no real way to write a tier list that also includes all the nuance, particularly in a game like WoW.
Very one dimensional.
Right.
Like in BFA, for example, Mistweaver was undeniably a PvP god.
Right.
Just like incredibly good in arenas and dumpster tier everywhere else. And then there's things like, if you had the exact corruption build that was required to make Rising Mists work at the beginning of Nilotha, you were a literal god.
Right, yeah.
And no mere raid boss could stand before your HPS. Exactly. But then if you didn't have that, again, dumpster tier. So it's very, in a lot of cases, it is context dependent, because something like Disc Priest being high on the list is very dependent on Spirit Shell right now.
Right.
Spirit Shell, and I guess like if things line up for Evangelism instead of Spirit Shell next tier, that works too. But if those don't line up, then something else might be better. Probably not Holy Priest because it doesn't have barrier, but maybe Resto Druid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just funny that, I mean, not funny to me, but it's just a no-win situation around tier lists. And I'm writing this, I'm saying this from like a personal perspective when writing this. It's just like, I even put this in my thing. I was like, look, I don't think people are going to say that I not that I got the wrong ranking, but the ranking's wrong in general, right? Just because like Mistweaver's terrible. And I'm like, well, I in good conscience, I can't put Mistweaver. I my goal was to put Mistweaver with Holy Priest, because I think in general, from a power perspective, we're the same.
They're similar, yeah.
So I was whatever Jack says for Holy Priest, I'm just gonna say that for Mistweaver, and like that way it's easy, right? Like I could have sandbagged and been like, well, Mistweaver is like B tier, but when you look at what a Mistweaver brings, particularly now in terms of the content we have today, like Mistweaver is not worse than Holy Priest. Like, to be fair, I would say that Mistweaver is not worse than Resto Druid, but that's probably
a bit more difficult. I would disagree. And that's mostly because of the non-healer, like non-healy things that Resto Druid brings.
Well, like with like Roar.
Bear Form being extremely good defensively, Convoke for DPS pushes, Iron Bark being in many cases better than Cocoon. Although, like, never let anybody tell you that Cocoon is bad, because Cocoon is also very good after they buffed it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the healer tier list. I mean, I don't know if we wanted to run through them, but those are just my initial points. Is that like, yeah, like I think tier lists in general are a necessary evil, but
I think the thing is, someone is going to write them and it might as well be you, because you can try and inject as much nuance and context into it as possible.
Yeah.
Within the constraints of the form.
I will say, actually, sorry, I did have one other point. Was actually something that I'm not going to take credit for it, although I could, because I don't know how many people read this, but I know that Volk mentioned about just when this was coming out, was that the other difference between like a tier list for like an ARPG or a game other than an MMO is like, there's not, you don't spend as much time investing in the individual character.
Yes. That's so, like, super important.
So like, there's not that, like, to when I look at a tier list for PoE, I'm going to play that character maybe for 200 hours if I enjoy the league, or maybe for like 20 minutes, right? And I can jump and do something else if I don't like the way it plays. Like, it's sort of an easy way to do it with something like this. Like, there's still a time period you put in to like get to a level where you're actually mythic rating and then be able to play the class or the spec in that arena. So
yeah,
there's definitely more of a time investment. And just like a MMOs, you sort of kind of care a little bit about your characters, right? And things like that. So there's sort of that aspect of, doing a ranking for a game like WoW or any really MMO, right? That isn't really, I don't know, you don't get it. Like, a tier list just sort of, I don't know, they don't take into account that aspect too of like, actually having fun playing the class, the spec, because you're going to put a lot of hours into it. So,
yeah. On that note, I think the tank one's wrong. Like, I just think it's wrong. I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to pull it up real quick.
Because, let's see. I mean, I don't have anything to say about the healer one. The healer one's spot on. So,
And there's like one specific thing. So I agree with most of this. Like the top four, I'm all aboard. Yep. Vengeance is very good. Blood DK, if you haven't played with one recently in Raid, they are basically indestructible. Same with Guardian Druid. Blood DK does no damage, but Guardian Druid does. But Blood DK is tankier. And then Brewmaster has this very weird niche where we can basically turn damage taken into damage dealt and do really dumb things. Like I did 1,000 DPS more than my co-tank on Sludge Fist last night because I solo tanked every time the Angry Dave was up. And that was my number one damage source at the end of the fight. Right. I did 4.5k DPS. It was real good. And then there's Prot Warrior and Protection Paladin. And I honestly don't know why Prot Warrior got a B+. Honestly, this is my main sticking point. I would say that in a lot of scenarios, Prot Warrior is better than Prot Paladin.
That's fair.
I think it really depends on what the raid values and like what the raid encounters ask for. Mm-hmm. Prot Paladin on Denathrius is real spooky in phase 3 because of how frequently you have to move out of consecration and how hard he hits.
That's true.
Prot Paladin also just does disgusting damage though, which is hard to quantify because they're squishy at the same time. Prot Warrior is a lot tankier. Not as tanky as Blood DK or Guardian Druid, though. And it doesn't have the damage of Brewmaster or Vengeance or Prot Paladin. Although I guess Vengeance got nerfed. But so it's like, I think there is merit in it being kind of like, it's not the best at anything, but it's kind of good at several things. I feel like I would actually personally put it probably above Brewmaster in terms, just because I think it is tankier in more relevant situations, but I haven't cleared Mythic on Prot Warrior yet. I'm still working on that. Mine's like relatively freshly geared, so
gotcha.
Grain of salt on that. Maybe I will be singing a different tune and like agreeing with Lairold in a week when I've gotten more time in on it. But yeah, I don't know. I think that Prot Warrior kind of, like you talked about, like you could sandbag Mr. Yeah. and like put it at B. I think that's kind of what happened with Warrior, honestly. I think Warrior should have been at least at where Prot Paladin is, given the relative strength of the two, in my opinion.
Gotcha. Yeah, I will say we did like we didn't do these as a group, I'll tell you. Well, maybe the tanks did, but at least the healers, we did a lot. We did all these individually just because I think they wanted to, Wellhead in general just wanted to get away from that idea that like them putting together a group list, right? So this is sort of why they went to this like letter ranking. The problem is people look at this and right, wrong, or indifferent, right? I'll just be like, oh, this is they stack rank them, which is not the conversation, right? It was never like that. It was sort of individual.
Yeah. Although actually now that I think about it, back on the Brewmaster versus Prot Warrior thing. Mm-hmm. I've been comparing it as I've been gearing up my Prot Warrior to how it was when I was gearing up my Brewmaster, and actually that 10% damage reduction buff that all tanks got has made a big difference.
And oh yeah, I can imagine
that. That might be contributing to why Prot Warrior at the gear I have now feels so much tankier than my Brewmaster did at that level.
Yeah.
Possible. So I don't know. My Prot Warrior will be in Mythic before too long though, so we will see how I feel about it then.
Nice. I can't wait. We'll have to come back and make our own tier list.
Ooh.
That'll no. God no, please. And then on the DPS one, they do have C's and B's on that list, Emelson, just so you're aware.
Okay.
So old Survival, our good friend Survival Hunter, Subtlety Rogue and Arms Warrior ended up down at the bottom of this one. So right, wrong, and or indifferent. Again, I think it probably follows slightly the community perception piece here too. Like even at a list this large, right?
Yeah, I think the main outlier here is probably Mark's Hunter, which I think community perception is still pretty high on.
Yeah.
Despite the Wild Spirits nerfs.
Yeah.
With the nerfs to that, I think it is in an appropriate spot on the list. But feels bad for Warriors with their top DPS spec being B+.
Yeah. Just crashing down the list. It's funny, Shadow Priest. I wonder, hold on, I'm going to read real quick. Does the Shadow Priest mention giving PI to other people? That would be hilarious. Out. Hold on, let's see. I'm going to read real quick.
Let's see. Power Infusion. Shadow single target mostly comes from Void Form and Power Infusion. So that's talking about using it on themselves.
Yeah, they talk about the Legendary being able to use it on other people. And the option of,
to give Power Infusion away as the saving grace on encounters that it performs poorly. So that is a factor.
Slight one. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. But yeah, so those are tier lists. I mean, I don't think they're wildly off across the board on any of them and how that was ranked. Yeah. But I think to your point, it follows community perception and there's always a nuance in terms of why something's rated that way. And I think
the disagreement that I have with the tier list on the tank front is not like saying that Prot Warrior should be S tier or something. I'm saying it should be like A- instead of B+, which is honestly such a nitpick.
Yeah, like a small one, yeah. I will tell you that the Wowhead comments, I didn't even read across all the board, but on the healer one are A+. People were not happy with the way I did it. And then also, they called me a 1 of 10 heroic raider. So that's fucking rude.
Really?
Somebody was like, I'll just read the comment. It was great. They were like, sorry, but how is Mistweaver A tier for Mythic Progress? Their toolkit lack on so much. I'm just going to read it the way they wrote it. I don't care about the grammar. Their toolkit lack on so much raid utility compared to other healers, and their throughput can't change that as there is even better throughput healers, Restor Druid, for example. On another note, who is Anomaly? I couldn't find any background info on that person providing us professional feedback. Face with open mouth. The most accurate search result I get is a 1 of 10 heroic raider, so I assume that's not it. Big smiley face emoji.
Oh my god. That's great.
Yeah.
That's why your Discord name in peak right now.
It's 1 of 10 heroic
raider. 1 of 10 heroic raider anomaly.
Yeah. Don't worry, I responded and said you can find my characters on Monk Anus. Buff Mistweaver, please. The monk and buff Mistweaver, the paladin. I let him know where he could look me up or they could look me up. So
very nice. Yeah, pro tip, searching for people's names on websites they're their character names is not going to work for most of us. None of my characters are named Emelson.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Yeah, which I find hilarious. So
actually my warrior's name is Emailson. Because there's a warrior in our guild named Males.
That's hilarious.
So it's just literally taking that middle part and just making it male, so it's Emailson. It's great.
That's so funny. Yeah, Sabe, who is this Anom kid? Well, I see him writing guides.
Who is he and why is he on my podcast?
Exactly. Why is he a professional writer?
Professional writer. Professional feedback, yes.
Yes. That's what I do.
It's not like it's a fan site.
Exactly. If I was a professional and I was getting paid to do this as a job, that'd be awesome. It's my only job, so. All right, so I think that's it for the tier list stuff. Unless you have any other final thoughts, they're what they are. I don't think they work in MMOs, but I can't say that they're a bad thing since I use them for other things.
Yeah, I do think for tanks, at least, it feels like it's probably correct to just do it on a boss by boss basis, or at least to say here's the tier list for the last boss.
The only one that matters. To be fair,
I have two minds on that, right? Because that's what actually matters. If you're cutting edge rating, that is what matters.
Right.
If you are not cutting edge rating, then honestly, how good the spec is in the first five is way more important, because that's what you're actually going to do.
Yeah, that's when it'll be
in a typical like Mythic Guild. I mean, on that note, Prot Paladin is a lot better than a lot of things on those first five because holy shit, can it do damage?
Yeah, crush. They don't do that much damage as early bosses, so be easy and nice. So cool. So that is the fun that is tier lists. Maybe I'll do a tier list or something. Maybe we'll just make our own tier list things, just random ones like coffees or the best Starburst flavor or something like that. All right, now into our sort of quick little patch updates for the week. Since we did get a build this week, a couple of changes, but not too many. So I think the first thing we wanted to talk about was just the Ian interview in terms of like the patch and maybe some of the implications. So Ian gave an interview on Dosu, which if you don't know what that is a Chinese streaming site. Douyu, not Dosu. Dosu's a Raider and Limit. Douyu. He gave an interview to Douyu to Ling Han Fusu, which is a streamer on Douyu. They're also the Chinese, collaborator or liaison for Raider.io. So do a lot of English to Chinese community sort of back and forth for Raider.io. He did an interview with Ian asking a bunch of different questions. I actually tried to watch the interview. The biggest issue, of course, is that it's number one, all in Chinese, and they do speak over Ian's answers. So it's sort of, you have to read. First of all, you don't know what the question is.
In practice, unless you speak Chinese, your best bet is just reading the transcript.
Exactly. Yeah. So they did ask a bunch of interesting questions about a couple different things from, the upcoming patch stuff to other areas of the game. But I did want to highlight a couple of, I think, key things and some things that we maybe got right. So first up around Mythic Plus, I think is the one area of that system. Basically, what we thought is not 100% confirmed happening, but something they're thinking about, which is leveraging the new Mythic Plus rating system that's going into the game as an ability to reward players in geared, reward players or use the similar upgrade path that they've added, leveraging the Mythic Plus score for a specific dungeon to let a person upgrade certain pieces, right? Or kind of tie the rewards there versus to the achievements of doing a plus 5 on every dungeon, plus 10 and plus 15 that they do today. So thinking about that, which will be fun. So Valor upgrades might be dependent on that.
Yes.
They also sort of acknowledge that sort of Tyrannical and Fortified, not the greatest. So there's a big disparity between the amount of keys you're going to do on one or the other.
I want to actually read the quote here.
Okay, cool.
Because it's great. Hang on. Where is it about? I had it and then I lost it. Oh, is it? It's in the other post, isn't it?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, here it is. Okay. Okay. So here's the quote. We do want to add separate scores, separate bonuses for doing it on Tyrannical and Fortified to encourage players to complete both versions as opposed to just pushing on Fortified Week and taking it easy on Tyrannical.
This is such a bad... Okay, so I actually didn't read that quote because I didn't realize we were going to tie rewards to that. That's stupid. That's so dumb. Imagine having to wait a week for a Tyrannical week or waiting for a Tyrannical week with good secondary affixes just to push high enough to then get upgrades.
Yeah. I mean, I think Raider.io probably has enough data that they could actually adjust the scores kind of in an Elo style or a true skill style. For the different affix combinations and do more than just Tyrannical and Fortified and do it so doing it on a is worth more than doing it on an easy week, because now the score does not reflect that at all. Doing it on the easiest possible week is worth exactly as many points. And there's even the joke that I remember there was a push week in BFA in Nihilotha towards the end of the tier that that week happened, and the joke in Guild was, well, you can't trust their score now. That push week just happened. Like, you can't look at their score now. You gotta pull up Raider IO and see when they got that score. Exactly. Because if they're like 2,500 or 3K now, I don't remember what the score was. It was like some like not the highest of high scores, but like reasonably high score. If you look at it and it's all this like fortified, I think it's fortified bursting volcanic.
And I remember that week. Yeah, right at the end. Yeah.
And that's all of their keys. Then you know they probably can't keep up.
That's funny.
Which I say that as someone that right now doesn't even have Keystone Master, so I guess I shouldn't throw stones.
Oh man, that's funny. Yeah, no, yeah, it's the Tyrannical and Fortify week disparity is just always funny to me. But they're doing something about it by tying rewards to making sure you do both.
Thanks. Well, so specifically what they said is I want to call this out as a prediction that we nailed, because we went through our predictions last week and we kind of missed a lot, but this one we got.
Yeah, that's true.
So we also want to tie this being the Mythic Plus score into our requirements to upgrade gear with Valor Points or achievements like Keystone Master or Keystone Conqueror. So instead of it being just do all the dungeons at plus 10 or do all dungeons at plus 15, it could be more get your score / rating to 2200, kind of like it is in PvP. So we got that prediction right. Credit to, I think it was Jaxel that actually brought up that idea in Brewmaster Veteran chat. That's exactly what it sounds like they're doing. I'm happy about that, because I don't want to have to keep trying to time Halls of Atonement pugs
over and over again. Yeah, which would be nice. Yeah, to balance that a little bit. Particularly if you don't need anything for the dungeon, but still time like the achievement and mount and stuff like that's doing all of them, which is fair. So that's on Mythic Plus. I think the only interesting point is they're not looking at adding new affixes other than the so they are looking at adding, of course, changing the seasonal affix. So that'll be upcoming. I don't think they have anything to announce just yet. He mentioned, but they have a couple they're working on. They'll pick the one that they like the best and let us know. The more interesting piece is they're not going to add I call them secondary affixes. Maybe they're not adding new affixes in general beyond just the seasonal one. They're really just looking at tweaking the existing ones, such as Melee's favorite Storming, and also Melee's favorite Spiteful, which
and Melee's favorite. I mean, I guess it's also applies to casters, but Quaking.
To be fair, I would say that
Melee's favorite Sanguine.
I will tell you that, like, for Sanguine and Quaking, I think because they've been along for longer, they're not as big a deal.
People
with them.
Like, people are not friends with those. Almost every single mob, including bosses, you can fit four people around, so, like, three melee plus a tank. And then, like, honestly, if your group is five melee, you kind of have it coming. Like,
right, yeah.
I don't have sympathy for your five melee group. Just, like, make your Holy Paladin run away. I don't care.
Exactly, yeah. But no, yeah, and the changes to Quaking, like, it doesn't do damage to you individually, right? Only if you only if you club. That was a change early on, right? In the start, I think that's
such a huge change.
Yeah, so they've made a bunch already. The Spiteful one, I think, is the most annoying because of like the range stuff with those guys, and that they hit from super far away, and the fact that
they kind of fixed it. It's like a little bit still inconsistent, but they kind of fixed it.
Yeah. But just the fact that you have to run away with that, and then Storming just being in one area, like, just means that, like,
Storming is my least favorite affix, and if I could pick one affix to remove, it wouldn't be Tyrannical or Fortified, it would be Storming.
Yeah.
Although it just Tyrannical makes, is real bad too. Fuck Tyrannical.
It just makes it tough to play the game, I think. So that is I think that's like the Mythic Plus stuff. The interview does go on to sort of some of the other sort of ideas, right? In terms of like class design and class balance. And there's a big one here that that I think is important to note, which I've never heard somebody at Blizzard say this, which I think is big, is that when Blizzard is looking at actually class design and changes and items and feedback and things like that, right? They kind of look at everything they can get their hands on. which is sort of an idea that I don't think they've ever publicly stated that. But sort of they'll use like class forms, they'll use, you know, third-party websites like Raider.io and even Warcraft logs, right? Yeah. And the idea is that like they have some of their, this is the quote, I'll just read it, right? Like he basically says, in the context of answering this question, he goes, we have some of our own internal data, but a lot of it matches what the community is looking at. Because at the end of the day, the community is looking at Warcraft logs, they're looking at Raider.io representation, and that's what leads raid leaders and dungeon pug leaders to decide who they want to bring, or sorry, who they want to invite to their group. Which is interesting because Blizzard has, like previous to this quote, Blizzard has always sort of leveraged this idea that they have more access to more data about the game.
I don't think that's true anymore. I don't think it. I mean, technically, yes, it is true because they have things that even that aren't logged, and like they can right. see stuff that even was private logged. But we have access to so much data in the era of Warcraft logs and Reddit.io that the gap is much smaller than it has been in the past. Right. Also, right. the Daisy on the back of Daisy. Thing Abe sent me a screenshot. It is on stream right now. It is pretty funny.
You need to get off this Daisy chain.
All right,
or train. Sorry, I mispronounced it. But
no,
little pun can for I
you. Menu for that pun.
That's fine. I'm gonna go to sleep.
no, Abe just sent me a screenshot of that.
It's awesome,
and I wanted to bring that up.
but yeah, I think the data thing I think is interesting to hear them say that, because that's all that in the past has been a reasoning where I've heard this as like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about as players because we have access to all this other stuff, all this information. It's like, well, I mean, you give us a bunch of information already from a logging perspective. We have enough logs now, enough people, like it's easy enough for someone to log information that like we have that in aggregate. We can see representation.
And we're starting to get even more like things built on Warcraft logs as they've expanded the capabilities of their API. Like right. this.
Like proc stats.
Like this. Look at this. Kills per week. The week that they did this hotfix. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's we have a lot of information now. A lot more than we did back in the day. And yeah. I think that our level of knowledge about the actual performance of things is much, much closer than it was, you know, in Wrath of the Lich King.
Right. Right. And then, I mean, Ian does in the same answer. So I focus much more on like, hey, they agreed we have as much information as they do about the game, right? Or at least similar levels, right? We're closer. But he does go on to say that like, the community perception still somewhat plays a part in balancing too, which is like a class can be perfectly balanced, like a group of classes can be perfectly balanced. But if one class is like considered inferior just based on the perception, they don't want players to not be able to find groups, which is funny as hell to them because Survival Hunter and Mistweaver has been absolutely trashed here for literally two expansions, right?
I love how... Like, okay, I didn't play WoD or MOP, really. My impression is that Mistweaver was totally fine in both of those.
It was, like, and I'm going to tell you, like, we were never, like, Mistweaver, I don't think, has ever been levels of Holy Paladin broken, because I think Holy Paladin in this expansion is probably one of the worst outliers, right? Like, you get into, like, that Holy Paladin here, and you get into Disc in late Legion with shields, right? Or, like, it then go even further back, like Shaman in Burning Crusade was like ridiculous, right? But the idea is like there's been periods where certain classes have been super broken. I think Holy Paladin is the most broken healing spec, but Mistweaver's never been there, right? Like the most broken we ended up getting was Castle Nathrian Corruption, and they fixed that real quick.
Yes, yeah,
right. They fixed that, or not Nathria, but Nyalotha. Sorry, but and they fixed that real quick. But even in like Legion, or sorry, even in WoD and MOP, we were good. Like you could take us, like we were on world.
The broken monk spec at that time was Brewmaster. Let's be honest. Right. It's been very consistent over the timeline of monks.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's just interesting that he says this, but like they, and I don't want to be broken. Like, I don't want Survival Hunter to now be the only spec that hunters get to play, or that Mistweaver gets to be the only healer. But
I do think it is very interesting that the two specs that are most consistently like the worst in their role, like just bad, are two of the ones that got the biggest overhauls in Legion.
Right. And I think who the fuck did that's an asshole? Sorry, that was rude. I don't really. If you're a class designer in Blizzard, I'm sorry, you're not an asshole. It's just a little upsetting. Sorry about that.
Yeah. The other one that's consistently like way down there as far as our presentation is like Feral Druid, because Boomkin exists.
Yeah.
And I think that's honestly like Max did the video this week. It's not in the show notes. I will mention it because he does go over from a raid leader's perspective why melee representation is as bad as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, it is basically just a numbers game. It is. There are almost twice as many melee specs or melee classes, including things like Feral, as there are ranged classes. And that means that when you have twice as many ranged slots as there are melee slots, because that's how encounters work, that's how you end up with ranged representation being really high, even for lower performing specs, but melee representation right. being much worse, even for stuff that is a lot closer in performance than ranged. And like, he was of the opinion that like the issue was not that there are so few ranged spots. Like,
yeah,
just I think he's right on that point, because it's really hard to design mechanics that don't require you to disconnect from the boss in melee. And simple fact that like range doesn't have to disconnect, they only have to like stop moving for a little bit for movement, kind of kind of a inevitability there. But
yeah, and it's, I mean, to be fair, it's certainly always been that way. I think the idea of most range specs, which I think they've gone away from a little bit, was always that like ranged, anytime there was movement, ranged did zero damage. Like that was always the trade-off, right? Was that if ranged ever had to move, their damage went to zero because they weren't casting, they weren't firing shots or whatever it ended up being. Right. I think that's changed over the years.
Like refreshing dots. And that's really like nowadays, if you play Affliction Warlock, for example, they can't do anything on the move except for refresh their dots. So part of the skill of playing ranged, if you talk to a really good ranged player and you're like, how do I get started? How do I learn to do this? One of the things that they will tell you is plan your movement. Move when it's beneficial to you. Move when you would be refreshing your dots anyway. Move when you'd be waiting on something to come off cooldown, which doesn't apply to most specs. So there are a couple low APM ranged.
Yeah. Or do the whole stutter step, right? Like move in between GCDs or casts if you can, and things like that. So
yeah.
I mean, I think that's a fair point in terms of just like the strength of each of them. And why, potentially you see like ferals and survival so low is just that melee in general.
I genuinely think that, like, I mean, actually, arguably, feral outperformed Boomkin on relevant damage this tier.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can look at something like Stone Legion Generals and Boomkin parses are way higher, but Boomkin parses are way higher because Starfall.
Yeah.
Fuck Starfall. I think the relevant damage from Feral might have been higher. It's really hard to tell from the aggregates on that. Yeah. And like, even in that case, people still brought Boomkin instead because they're ranged.
Exactly. Yeah, which, it's one less, melee spot, one less chance, which is funny too, because a lot of people say, like, melee is somewhat more difficult to play or something. Like, you always hear that too, which I think is like,
I don't think that's strictly true. I think that I honestly would say casters are harder to play than most melee.
They hit, like, the mechanics in range are much more difficult. Well, not more difficult, but there's generally more of them, and they require, like, to your point, like,
I think honestly most of the reason I would say that is just that they have to really play around their movement in a way that melee just don't.
Yeah, that's true.
Melee is like kind of like learning when you can stay in for a little bit longer and get extra damage versus moving out.
Yeah.
Ranged have to deal with movement so much more often. And if you're not good at doing it, then your damage is going to really suffer.
That's fair. But yeah, so I think that's Jeff's interview. I didn't see anything else unless you wanted to cover any other points from it.
I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing, so I'm working from the highlights, and I don't think there's anything else I really want to touch on.
Yeah.
At this time, other than I guess there is a comment in there about no third stack for Demon Hunters. In classic Ian fashion, it is a not right now answer.
I just
thought that was funny. I think it's a good answer because who knows what they're going to do in 10 years. Exactly. But also,
very lawyer answer.
Yeah.
I love Ian for those. I'm not going to lie. All right, cool. All right. Well, so that is sort of the Ian interview. Some interesting stuff. I think the data point, I think, is one that will be fun. And the whole community perception on spec stuff is interesting. Just I don't think they actually design around that at all. Personal opinion. So next up is just sort of this week's class changes. So sort of we'll probably do this as PTR builds roll out. We'll sort of talk about all the amazing changes that monks are getting in particular. And this week is no different. Mm-hmm. It's so a bunch changes of
changes. Do we get this week?
So Crystallis PvP. I mean, it's PvP changes. Crystallis, which is the life cocoon reduction PvP talent, went from 40-second reduction to 30-second reduction. So massive, 10 seconds less. And then they fixed the spelling on dematerialize, which was a new talent they've added, PvP talent they've added for Mistweaver. And Nimble Brew, is that added to Brewmaster?
So the way they wrote it is confusing because they removed the old spell and added a new spell in its place with a very similar name.
Gotcha, okay.
So basically the old one was that you learned a spell to craft Nimble Brew and you could trade that to your allies. And it removed some CC effects from you and reduced the duration of them. Only a Brewmaster talent, though. So
I have never heard of this. I'll be completely honest with you.
Yeah, that's because the troll brew, the troll build for Brewmaster doesn't use it.
Gotcha. Okay, fair
and enough. Why on earth would you have Brewmasters running flags?
It's true.
Then, so they changed it to Nimble Brew, which is now a ground-targeted thing, which prevents one full loss of control within the next 8 seconds on everyone that gets hit, all allies that get hit.
Interesting. So
I don't know if that's better or not. I honestly never ran it. It feels like Nimble Brew now is probably like harder to use, but potentially like more blowout potential. I don't know.
That's so weird. Yeah.
It's like, so paladins have a talent that can remove stuns, mostly stuns, honestly. Remove stuns that is like Nimble Brew better.
Okay.
It's like, it's hard because like Nimble Brew is AoE, right?
Right, yeah.
The paladin one is not. I don't know that, what's the talent, what's the duration? Cooldown on this cooldown on the paladin one is like half, but this prevents you from getting stunned in the first place, okay, which can matter for something like a cast. So like I don't know, I don't do enough PvP to really know the answer, and I definitely do not do Brewmaster and RPGs, which seems like the only place where this is possibly relevant, because if you can like throw this on your entire group and that just like next CC is just not happening. Granted, it may just like eat a Shadow Fury on a lot of them,
which is still helpful. I mean,
it is still helpful, but it's not like saving your healer from a Hodge or something kind of value.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, the Mistweaver ones are just funny. they spelled something wrong, so they fixed it. Like, thanks, buds. Really getting it in there.
We still do not have Covenant Legendaries for Monk.
Yes, we don't. But we do have ones for Paladins, which I wanted to talk about just for a second, okay?
Okay. Let me
and I just want to talk about the Kyrian one, because if this is
this seems
absolutely ridiculous. Like I don't know the this, but this just seems nuts. So the new Covenant specifically, and to be fair, from a holy perspective, I don't know if this math's out to be generally better than Shock Barrier, which is already very strong. However, their Covenant specific legendary for Kyrian is that every 10 seconds after casting Divine Toll, you cast it again at 60% effectiveness. This effect lasts 30 seconds. So essentially you get three additional 60% like effective Divine Toll cast after you cast it. So is that broke? Like, to me, that seems fucking out of control.
There's a lot of questions about how this actually works, because you can't actually craft this right now on PTR. But
how does it actually, what do you mean? How does it
actually we don't work? Know if it, like, for example, triggers Pelagos. Does every additional cast give you Pelagos orbs? We don't know. Does every additional cast for Protection Paladins interrupt? Because if it does, I guarantee you there's at least some keys where this is just the best legendary, because it's just AoE interrupt every 10 seconds.
So, unbelievable, dude.
But yeah, this seems very good, but I think, honestly, the real highlight of the Paladin one is Venthyr Unknown.
Oh, you know, just every 10 seconds you recast Ashen. For
oh my god, don't do that. Yeah, I think honestly,
extend the duration of Ashen by 100%, so now it lasts for 90 seconds on the ground.
I don't even know what they would do with the Venthyr one. And it looks like they have no idea what they're going to do with the Venthyr one. But like, Ashen Hollow is already so good. How do you make it better?
I don't know.
Just completely breaking things.
And this is the biggest thing I have with like a Kyrian legendary like this is that it sounds very good, but it's also because Divine Toll is very good, right? So like the underlying abilities here are so like, because if we move this to like what is like an analogous one of these to like a legendary that monks have, right? Or sorry, an ability that monks have, right? And you think about it, so there's like Night Fae, right? Maybe you. I don't know, you cast more Night Fae stuff, or like the area on the ground, it lasts on the ground longer or something like that. I mean, right?
Honestly, like the closest comparison is probably to Bone Dust Brew. Like if it just casts Bone Dust Brew every 10 seconds for 30 seconds. Like around three extra Bone Dust Brews. And they were 60% effective. And it just like recast it around you or whatever like was the best to make it actually hit things. I don't know. I don't care. But for the sake of example, that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Yeah. Which would be amazing. Even if it just like dropped at your feet, like you could just position yourself around something, right? So
yeah. And this is honestly better because a lot of the secondary, like every one of them, from what we know, is going to refill your holy power on your paladin. So it's literally like an extra free 5 holy power every 10 seconds. That's a lot. That's and
15 extra holy power?
Like
every minute.
And we don't know how it interacts with conduits. For example, there's a conduit for paladins that gives you extra casts of your ability when you on your Divine Toll when you cast it. Maybe every extra cast triggers that conduit. We don't know because you can't craft it yet.
God, but this
definitely seems like they are tuning things for the Covenant Legendary Redefined Spec Balance in 9.1 kind of level, which honestly feels really bad. And Ian, we didn't talk about this, but Ian did mention in the interview they have no plans to reduce the barriers to switching covenants.
Right.
And honestly, this just feels really bad. Like, I'm like really worried about what we're going to get for the monk ones, because
I don't think the monk ones are going to be usable. I'm going to call it right now. We won't use them. Like I just don't.
I think Brewmaster will use the Kyrian one, and it will establish Kyrian Brewmaster as the only Brewmaster spec.
Depending on what the actual Kyrian one is, I could see like that would be the only one that potentially I think you're right in terms of like depending on what the legendary is that might define like this is the one like, you want
to
pick
regardless. I don't even think it would need to be that good for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Mistweaver we'd have to probably see exactly what the effect was, but
I will note kind of on that like balance of these things, they did nerf the Venthyr one for warriors for arms and protection, I mentioned that last week because what it was condemn extending shield wall.
Yeah.
So you could just like have shield wall up a disgusting amount of time at above 20% or above 80% and below 20%. And like, I don't even know if that would have been like enough. But then there's also things like if there's ever an add up, you can just continue extending it.
That's so funny.
And things like that. So they obviously are paying some attention to the balance and tuning of these. But this, like, they are definitely not aiming for like low powered collector's item. These are definitely intended to be usable. You will want these legendaries. And that means that we're going to end up with just a de facto, like, this is the one spec that you play for this.
Yeah.
For a lot of specs.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see.
You play for this.
Yeah. We'll see what they come up with, monks. I'm not excited.
Watch it be Venthyr. Of all things, it's just they're going to remake the Venthyr Covenant and they're going to have a Venthyr legendary that just buffs it through the moon. And we're all going to be Venthyr next patch.
Kill me now.
I would have actually not minded being Venthyr today in my Halls of Atonement runs. That one we missed by 10 seconds, we would have made it if we had had the bets, because we didn't have a Venthyr. Because Venthyrs are, like, really rare. That's like, unless it's a Paladin, they're really rare.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how they come out. I mean, some of these just, and I think they seem strong, too, just because, like, the underlying abilities are also strong. So
And that's exactly like I haven't looked at Warlocks or anything like that. Although I think if I pull up the Rogue ones real quick, the Necrolord one seems real good. Serrated Bone Spike has two additional charges and hits two additional nearby enemies.
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
Hey, we kings over there. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too. Yeah. Oh, it just, this is like when we see stuff like, it's so funny. There's like almost like there's like a second gut punch. I feel like when you talk about this stuff in terms of like, first you use the ability and the ability is not great, which sucks. And then they basically build these sort of power increases on top of that ability. And it doesn't matter what the power increase is, because the underlying ability is already not that fun to utilize or use, or maybe not that powerful. So it's like, great. Like, I don't even care about the legendaries because I don't think what they're going to do is ever going to make like a difference in the way that like Mistweaver play, like Mistweaver, you know, in terms of monks, right? Like what's good or what's not. So, or it'll be to your point, like there'll just be one legendary that absolutely makes one covenant undeniably the best. And like, there's no, I don't know. There's no difference. So
yeah,
like there's
that. Some of the extra feels bad on this, like as a protection paladin, if Divine Toll works like we think it does and it like interrupts things every 10 seconds, that's going to be honestly just like one of the best setups for Mythic Plus as a protection paladin. None of the other legendaries, like there's another one that's also related to Avenger Shield is pretty good, but not on that level. Whereas I think Venthyr is still, well, depending on what the Venthyr legendary they get, is still arguably one of the best for raid because of how much extra damage you can put out. And so that's just going to make it feel even worse to be like, I am Venthyr for raid. My Mythic Plus setup sucks ass.
Exactly. So we'll see what they do with them. It'll be interesting to see. They haven't really talked either about like doing reworks or changes to the actual underlying covenant abilities. So maybe we'll see something there for us. But in any event, as always, no monk legendaries known as of today. So we will be the last ones to get those.
Fingers crossed next week. They released three new classes worth of them this week.
Yeah.
I kind of doubt we get them next week, but one can hope.
We'll see.
There are only 12 classes. If they do three per week, next week we get three more. The week after that we get three more. Maybe.
Yeah, we'll see how they do this. We'll see what they're talking about. So.
And that still gives us like 3 weeks for them to nerf them into the ground.
Before they release it. 3 weeks after that.
Yep.
All right. So next up off of legendaries, we get some awesome updates to the best system they put in this patch or this expansion. Torghast. There's more layers and more wings. That's it.
Wasn't there supposed to be some kind of like Torghast revamps happening? That
there is a new progression system they've added to Torghast, or okay. They're adding to Torghast.
Right. That thing, which where, is essentially, like, you don't lose everything if you fail at like the seventh floor or something.
Well, it's the rewards are based on more than just, it's like a score based thing. Okay. So the idea is that instead of just being like pass fail, like either you complete it or you don't complete it, there's like, if you complete it faster, you potentially have to do less, right, to get a similar reward. Like maybe if somebody, like, I think the idea is that like the quicker, I think it's basically going to be time based, but the faster you complete something, the more rewards you end up getting, which means I think they're still capping rewards, but that is, you might have to do like only one run a week versus like two or three. So
I mean, on the one hand, I know a lot of people liked that Torghast was not time based. I actually like was doing a Torghast run and just went to the store in the middle of the run this week because I got to a new floor and I realized I needed to get to the grocery store before it closed. So I just left my character there and ran to the store and came back and I was still logged in.
That's so funny.
Like if it's time based, you can't do that.
Exactly.
At the same time, like there's a bunch of people in the comments on this news that are like, oh man, it's the worst system in the game. I think that's a very strong statement when we have a game where world quests exist.
To be fair, I actually, as an idea, I actually like Torghast. I think the problem is with any system like this is that you can't time meaningful, like if you tie a meaningful reward to it, eventually you get everything you want from that meaningful reward. So the system becomes like,
I also think the progression in it is too binary. Basically to that same point.
Yeah.
Like I did a twist and quarters run on my warrior this week because that was the way to get the legendary recipe that I wanted.
Yep.
And I got to floor six, got my legendary. And then was like, well, I'm kind of busted OP already. Why don't I just continue? I got to floor 17 and then like anytime anything hit me with shield block down, I just fell to the floor, just on the ground.
Oh, God.
And I hadn't crafted a legendary yet, and the one I was crafting doesn't even work solo, so...
Just like, I'm done.
Just, yeah, I mean, I died repeatedly on floor 17, just trying to get to the last boss, because it was honestly a really bad floor. But,
yeah.
That felt really bad because I got all the way to floor 17. That was like an hour and a half and nothing.
That sucks. Yeah. I think hopefully the scoring system helps with that they've added, but they are adding new wings and new floors, it seems. So we'll have some new tile sets coming in. So that was sort of the breaking news this week. Next up is dungeon portals are back. Which I think is gonna be fun. So dungeon portals coming back. These, of course, well, I like how we're saying something's coming back and why did they just leave it in the game? But in any event, dungeon portals are coming back. Basically, if you complete a dungeon on a mythic plus 20 in time or above, you end up getting a portal that takes you allows you to port your character directly to that dungeon. This is the same reward that was in MOP for challenge modes. So if you completed a challenge mode in time during that expansion, you ended up with a portal or a spell that let you port directly.
Is my headset? No, okay. Anom, your mic turned off. Anom. It's not me, right? Because he's not showing up at all for me. Hang on. I need to. I don't know if he can't hear me at all. Stream can hear me. Stream can hear me. Stream can't hear you, I think. Let me look at Discord. I guess let me hop in and out of Discord. Oh, okay. Bye. Oh, no. Is this a non-PC issues part two? Well, that's unfortunate. It let me back in. Hey, I can hear you.
Am I back?
I can hear you.
Can you see me?
Yeah, I gotta turn back on the thing.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, we just lost like solid several minutes of you talking and not being able to hear you. I don't know if you couldn't hear me either.
I couldn't. I thought you DC'd. And to be fair, I see that old Lincoln in the chat's making fun of my computer. I actually had to send my new computer back for them to fix it. It sort of an aside from my answer to that question, and everybody wants to love about Anam's troubles with computers, is it powered down randomly on Thursday evening. And when I turned it back on, it did not turn on. And the light that said VGA on my motherboard was blinking red, which when I looked in the manual basically said, your graphics card screwed. So brand new 3080 dumpstered. Really excited about that. Trying to get a new one of those. So especially today. So yeah, so this is my old computer. I do not know what happened. Discord crashed and then came back. So I'm back. I don't know when the last time what you heard of me talking about. I was just talking about
Torghast.
Really? I had moved on to challenge modes.
Oh, sorry, challenge modes. You're right. We had started talking about the dungeon portals.
Yeah, dungeon portals. Gosh, I talked for probably like 5 minutes about them, but my point was essentially a lot of people are making a big deal about this, like just coming back now, and why wasn't this always a thing, right? But I don't think people never did Mythic Plus. Like high keys like this to get portals. They did it to push, right? That was the goal, was to go as high as you could. So the fact that they're adding them is cool.
I mean, this means you didn't do challenge modes to get portals either.
You just did it at the time. It was like a nice perk. But like nobody complained about Mythic Plus in like Legion or BFA not giving portals. And like now that they're giving portals, I read a bunch of the comments. They're like, why wasn't this always in the game? Like re-adding stuff we had like two expansions ago. Great. Like,
dude, at the same time, like I do think this is really like good idea and very low cost, low risk. Like you're not gonna imbalance the game or screw up the gear progression curve by giving people portals for completing a plus 20.
Yeah. And nobody uses them. Like I don't think I ever used my challenge modes from MOP. Like maybe I used I probably used one of them just because it was an out of the way instance I needed to get to.
There's the one in the Mantid area that gets used a lot for archaeology. Because you do the archaeology thing, you convert all of your things into the Anchorage ones, and then fish for the stupid bug mount.
That's fair. I have the bug mount. I love it. But yeah, that's fair. But yeah, other than that, it's a cool change. It's a cool thing to add. So if you do high keys, more power to you. I just wish there were challenge modes, man. They were more fun.
So Lincoln is saying in MOP they were useful because they redid the Veil and the 0.3 patch.
When they destroyed it. That's true.
So they did that and then also in 8.3. I'm not sure which.
Getting to Veil from there. Yeah, that's true. If you had the MOP ones.
At the same time, I just put my Hearthstone in the Veil for that patch. And use my dollar on Hearthstone to get back to BFA zones. Because honestly, Dalaran is a more convenient city than Zul'Dazar anyway. So true. I didn't really need my Hearthstone there at all.
I just got summoned. Or I had mage friend port me if I needed to get to Vale.
Imagine having mages.
One of my buds plays a mage, won't ever play a different class. I love it. But yeah, they're adding portals, which I think is cool. It's an interesting thing. Finally, they did rename Mega Solash, which was a great name, to Soul Cinders, which essentially, given the description, looks like it's the new currency to craft higher item level legendaries, which means it's probably the currency Torghast is going to start dropping once the patch goes in. So this is sort of what they're doing to avoid Solash hoarding. Basically, it'll drop a new currency. You'll have to refarm it up. And it doesn't, I mean, to be fair, I think it'll be used both for the upgrades, the way the upgrade system works, and then to craft new ones. You'll just craft the new ones at the higher item level with the new material. So, which means, does that mean we get new recipes that people have to level up for, like, the base items?
I don't think so. I imagine, so here's what I think is going to happen based on what we have so far, is that Solash is still going to drop, but Solash is only going to be used for making, like, the first four ranks.
Okay.
And then to rank, make rank 5 and 6, you're going to need Solash plus Soul Cinders. Oh. So then, like, you need the amount. So if you're making a brand new legendary, and you want to make, just, like, jump straight to rank 6, you need the first 4 ranks worth of Solash plus the 5 and 6 worth of Soul Cinders. So.
But what about the base item? What about the base item?
The new base items are going to be with the crafting system we saw already. Like the new crafter things.
So I'm gonna let's say if I didn't make a legendary, right? I'm not gonna make my first legendary. If I want to make the rank 5 legendary, right? Was one about everything else. I'm gonna need to farm Torghast for both Solash
and then Soul Cinders. It's just gonna be like when you complete a Torghast run, it's gonna give you Solash and Soul Cinders.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And then like if you already have the Solash, then the extra is just gravy, and like I guess you can make extra rank 4s and not have to deal with it. Yeah. But then like there's no benefit really to hoarding. Like, you might as well just make those rank 4s now.
Gotcha. That's fair.
Also, I just want to throw in there, when they called it Mega Solash, I couldn't stop thinking of, there is this mechanic in Magic called Morph.
Okay.
And one of the sets that they released came out with, I kid you not, Mega Morph.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was probably one of the worst received mechanics ever, despite being fine mechanically. Yeah, like, it was totally fine.
It was just the name that people hated.
Just the name. Nobody liked it. Everybody was like, oh my god, did you really?
That's so awesome. That's so awesome. God. Mega. That's funny. Megamorph and Power Rangers, like our Power Ranger question last week.
That too.
God, dude, I forgot about that. But yeah, I think that's at least our initial patch update. And now we have, so I don't know. So we have anything else on the patch this week that you noticed? I mean, those are the big things for us.
I got all prepared to get off for raid testing, and then it didn't happen. So I just like went back to working on my warrior.
F this. Yeah. So now I want to add a new section to the podcast, Emelson.
Okay.
Because I'm actually getting, for the first time in 15 years, I'm getting into WoW lore. Like, I want to know what the story is. I want to know what's going on in World of Warcraft. So I want to start this new section called Lore Corner. I don't know if that's a cool name or not. I thought of it as I was typing it. Where we just talk about lore stuff for maybe like a story or two. And basically it'll be like, as more of the story comes out, we'll bring it in, and maybe I'll start to put like little tidbits of things that I find interesting about the lore. So in the Lore Corner, I'm going to try and talk about, I don't know what is a spoiler or not a spoiler. So if you don't, we'll try. If I know something's a big spoiler, I'll at least say this is a big spoiler. If I don't know, I'll probably.
I think this was in the announcement trailer for the patch. I would say that, like, as far as spoilers go, this one is either not a spoiler or such a minor one that I don't care.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So today is in the Lore Corner. We're talking about the fact that it was officially confirmed that Kingsmorn, which is the weapon that Anduin wields, is Charlemagne. But Charlemagne. This is going to be the best part of Lore Corner because I'm going to pronounce all these freaking names.
I'm excited. Charlemagne,
they're the same thing. So Kingsmorn was made from Charlemagne, which, if you don't know what that is one of the twin blades that Varian Wrynn wields, which is super interesting to me. So this
basically
is where
I took Anduin's sword and corrupted it,
turned it into Kingsguard. Yeah, which is cool, but it also like, oh wait, shit. Anduin had the sword in his hand, like he possessed. Shit,
I don't know if he had the sword in his hand.
So my entire idea of like, so I don't know where the sword's been. So here's what I thought happened. And maybe my brain is dumb and I didn't realize that maybe the sword was always in Anduin's possession, which makes what I'm about to say totally irrelevant.
More recently, it has been in Anduin's possession. He acquired it after Legion.
Okay, so what I was thinking, and I'm just going to tell this because now that I know that it's wrong, people can ignore it, was that I thought that Varian kept it and died with it, but at the Burning Shore or the Broken Shore, the start of Legion, right? And I thought he had died with it and that the Legion had gotten it and delivered it like through them to like the jailer, cool. Right? Yeah, and then cool. The jailer had the weapon like ready for Anduin. It was like this master plan, right? Like, because now you know that Denathrius is Nethrazim and they're working with the jailer, whatever. I thought that would have been cool, Circle, but since he's had it, it just meant they stole it from him and made it, which is less cool, but still interesting. But it does have some, I also saw that maybe some other implications in the fact that like maybe Varian is in the Shadowlands somewhere. And
I assume he would be, right? Because it's the land of the dead.
So, which will be cool to see if like he comes into play at all. But yeah, it's not really a spoiler. It's just like they officially confirm that it's the same weapon, just corrupted. So
that does raise the question, what was Frostborn originally?
I don't know, actually.
I guess it doesn't mean that like every like whatever
weapon
Rune Blade was originally another blade. Like some of them were just made to be that, but
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if like 9.2 we find out Frostborn was originally someone else's sword.
That'd be cool. I'm still waiting for that Lich King boss, man. Bring Arthas back, bring Varian back. Oh, what if they do the whole like, okay, remember the Star Wars at the end of the Ewok one? Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
When like Luke and like they're having the big party and Luke looks over and it's like Yoda is a blue thing. Obi-Wan Kenobi is a blue dude. But what in this one, it's like Varian, Rin, Arthas like looking at Anduin as Anduin's like struggling to like be a good guy again, like rip free from the jailer's control. That'd be cool. I should write, dude. Wow. Like Lincoln, you're right. I should write WoW lore. I'm amazing at this.
Oh my god.
But yeah, we'll put more. I think more in the lore corner would be cool. I did read a bunch of other spoiler posts. I don't actually know what they mean because like there's apparently some spoilers about from Sylvanas because they fleshed out the dungeon journal this week with more details. So there's a couple spoilers about the fight. The fight is gonna have multiple portals, which means Emelson, what do we say about fights?
It has multiple floors.
It has multiple floors, which means it's gonna be a great fight. Boss.
I am still not convinced. Not convinced, but I am hopeful. Being that it is the end boss next year, then it is a good boss.
Yeah. It'll be fun. It drops a mount, so that's another good boss check mark. So multiple floors, of course, is an automatic, but if you don't have multiple floors, if you drop a mount, automatically a good boss too. So
no, Jaina is not a good boss and Jaina drops a mount. She also Nezoth.
But her mount is super cool. Nezoth doesn't drop a mount, does he?
Oh, I guess it's just this. No.
No, it does. It does, because I got it right after before I quit. Yeah. Okay. I felt bad. I literally got it the week I told my guild I was done. I was like, ugh. I'll trace this. My bad. Cool. So I think that's it for Lore Corner. It's a short one, but maybe we'll start to expand this section, add more lore stuff.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. So now on to my... Now this is honestly, I don't know if this is my favorite part of the show.
Oh anymore. No, it's been demoted.
It might be demoted, but for now it's my favorite part. We get to Q&A, which is of course my favorite part. You can send your questions into Emelson and myself. We will answer them on air. I say this, we have no limits. We do have some limits, but you'll know when you hit them, or we'll know when you hit them, and we just won't answer your question. So today. We have a couple of questions coming in from a few different people, and let's go get into them. So first up, from Big Sad, they are -75 Raider.io # Necrowalker. Thank you very much for the question, Big Sad. They ask, are you enjoying the new Path of Exile League? How's your build going? So for whatever reason, every time there's a new PoE league, the brewmasters ping me and ask me what my build is. I don't know why. I guess I talk about it a little bit. So I did start playing this league slightly. I think I'm like halfway through leveling. I haven't put a ton of time into it. But it's fun so far. The new mechanics, I think is pretty cool. But I know there's a bunch of people who don't enjoy it. They say it's like a crafting simulator, I think is sort of the feedback that I've read on Reddit and other areas. But it's cool. It's Path of Exile. It's just, I don't think my old ass brain just doesn't have enough space in it to figure out what to do. So like, I'm getting really confused when I play. I'm like, there's all these things that I'm like, I don't even know what's good anymore. But it's PoE, so it's fun. You just pick a build. I Googled, of course, what the best build in PoE this league was. Looked at a tier list and was like, this one looks good. And
yeah, I mean, I tried playing PoE again a couple leagues ago and just like went and looked like, okay, give me a... Because everybody tells you this too. Go find a starter build.
Yeah.
Because otherwise your character is going to suck and you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
And so I went and found a starter build. Yeah. And didn't even get through the... I think I made it through the first act this time, actually.
Nice. I will tell you, I don't think I said this. Maybe I said this on the podcast, but with PoE in specific, like specifically, like there's so many systems that like what you should do if you ever want to get into it is basically say like, I want to pick one thing I want to understand for this league and that's it. And so like you basically pick the one thing you want to understand and just play the game. And once you understand that, then you pick the new thing. Cause like,
yeah,
there's no way you walk into a league and know everything. So.
Yeah. And it's like, I definitely didn't try and understand everything. It was just like, I don't know. I just kind of bounced off it again.
Yeah. It's not a drop in drop out game, which I think is the problem. Like you have to invest some time. It's not like a Diablo 3 season, which like is very like a simplified. Exactly. Yeah. You play for like 3 or 4 days, you've hit like the part where it's just grinding gear and you're like, all right, I'm good. So all righty, thank you very much, Big Sad, for the question. Sorry, I don't have better. Oh, and build wise I'm playing a, what is it, Bane Blast or Blade Flaw BFBB Assassin was the build I picked. I don't know what the acronym stand for, but it's like some Rain of Arrows thing. It's fun. Next up comes from Hursty, of course, our friend. And they ask an actual serious WoW-related question this time. Thank you, Hursty. They ask, what are your, and Emelson, so both of us, what are our ideas for a reworked Venthyr ability? And what Covenant Legos would you two like to see?
So we've answered the Venthyr one before, so I'm actually just going to recap my suggestion for it, which was basically, you know, an on-use thing that basically gives you, like, claws and you drain anima from things. And it, like, you know, empowers your ability some way. Maybe it's, like, self-healing. Maybe it's, like, giving you chi or mana. I don't know. Whatever makes sense for the class at hand. If it gave energy to brewmasters, it would be really bad. But, you know, something like that. I had a really more fleshed out idea last time we talked about this.
Yeah. I don't remember what I said.
Yeah, I don't either. I barely remember what I said.
That's probably something stupid.
But yeah, like the idea of draining anima to empower your other abilities and like trying to use that to set up, you know, bigger stuff.
Makes sense.
Far as Covenant Legendaries, I would like to see none.
Yeah.
But I mean, if I can be a little bit less of a spoil sport. I would say, like, for, I guess let's go just through all of them, right? Like,
yeah.
For Kyrian, For Kyrian, I would say something takes it off the GCD. And
no legendary for that.
I mean, if they're gonna do it, they gotta do it somehow. Please, for the love of God. This literally is the definition of cooldowns you took off the GCD, and it's still on the GCD. It just buffs you. It doesn't do anything else.
It resets cooldowns.
It just buffs you. Anyway, I would probably say, like, let it stack higher. Increase the duration of the buff that it puts on things.
Yeah, I mean, I would also potentially, so power increase I think is an easy one, but I think if we wanted to do something different, I think the abilities it resets.
Maybe it could reduce the cooldown of them?
Either reduce the cooldown or maybe do like it reset, like it removes the cooldown on them for somewhat of a duration inside of it, right?
30 seconds of just pressing kick smash.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lincoln. It's probably because I'm leaning back in my chair. Is it better now?
Stop lounging, bud. It's funny, in Discord I can hear you perfect. It's just
moving my mic forward so it can hopefully pick me up more consistently.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I mean, I would say that for me, it'd be cool if it was like reset, like just leverage the already, like the abilities that are already there, just buff those. So maybe reset for like the first like 15, 20 seconds, or like every 5 seconds, reset the ability.
Right. So part of what makes this hard is that, like, I don't want to suggest really busted things.
Right.
But at the same time, a bunch of the Covenant Legendaries that we've looked at already have really busted things.
Yeah.
It's I don't want to suggest anything like the Divine Toll Legendary, because that's bonkers.
Yeah, that seems a little bit out of control. But yeah, so I might do like the reset thing. I think that would be cool. The Bonus Brew one we talked about, I think being able to drop it multiple times, I think makes sense, would be interesting.
Give it an extra charge, increase the proc rate, make the procs more consistent. I don't know.
Yeah, or even just like, what if it auto dropped to your feet every like 15 or 20 seconds? Like, just why you had the legendary on. That'd be pretty cool. It would also probably break you out of stealth and then, you know, ruin everything in terms of skips and Mythic Plus. But
yeah, I mean, I kind of like that. I am a fan of the idea of just giving it multiple charges, of being able to be like, okay, yeah, I'm going to use multiple. And then, like, maybe you use two at once and it, like, doubles the effect of all your procs, or, like, gives you twice as many procs or something.
Or
you spread them out and just have it more consistent. Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be cool. Let's start with Venthyr, because I think Venthyr is the easy one. And the answer is, we need to wait and see what they do with the Covenant ability.
They're not changing it. We've already talked about this. So let's just go with the mirror one. It's going to be the same thing we always get, because they don't care about monks.
In that case, it's going to just be a flat percent damage increase to them, because that's... Do I want that? No. Is that what it's going to be? Probably.
Nope. It's going to get... You get two extra monks to come out of the portal,
that's
Emelsin. Just
a, all right. That's a flat damage increase with extra
stats. No, but you get two of them. I don't know. That's what I would do.
Okay.
You get more monks come out of the portal. That's stupid. The ability sucks anyway. All right. Sorry. Next. Night Fae.
Night Fae.
Final one. Night Fae. It would be cool if the legendary increased the reset chance. That would be cool. And potentially expanded the design on the floor, just because I think it looks cool. I would just wear the legendary just because if I got more of that design on the floor, awesome. I'm happy.
I think getting a second charge and increased reset chance would actually be really like good. It already has this thing where, like, if you get a reset on Feyline Stomp while you just have other abilities that are higher priority, you just waste part of the reset, which is not ideal. And adding an extra charge just kind of fixes that and makes it a little bit smoother. So increased reset chance, higher number of charges, and, like, I don't know, increase the damage. Maybe they could, like, quadruple the effect that you get, the, like, bonus effect that you get.
Like, yeah, that'd be cool.
Brewmasters could get like extra stagger while they're in it, and I guess that actually would be really good for Windwalker, because they get their extra effect is damage.
Yeah, Mistweavers get,
but hey, Feyline Stomp is not as good as Ancient Aftershock, so nobody's allowed to complain about Feyline Stomp being good until Ancient Aftershock is done.
That's fair enough. So yeah, so Hirsty, thank you. Sorry, we didn't answer really we've answered the first part of your question, I think, before, and I just don't remember what I said. But you can go back and watch old episodes. They're all listed at peaksrenny.com.
I will see if I can find the one where we actually talked about that and link it in this episode.
But thank you very much, Hirsty. Questions, as always, you are amazing. We have one more question tonight. It comes from our good friend Abbe Leto 75. And old Abbe asks, actually, this is directly towards me, I believe. Will you kill more than one heroic boss? Question mark. Are you paying for that boss?
Smiley. And if so, how much are you paying?
Okay, so yes,
please I will give the answer more. In copper.
God, that's a lot of math. I will kill more than one heroic boss eventually. Right now I am 1 of 10 heroic AOTC. Because I only kill the final boss. And I paid a couple million gold for that. So actually, you know what? I didn't pay any money for that. It's none of your business what I paid. No. I mean, thank you, Abby. Yeah. The comments are great. I love
WoW. If you missed our discussion earlier in the podcast, this is related to a WoWhead comment.
Yeah, so to recap quickly, we did tier list this week at WoWhead. I, of course, write for Mistweavers on WoWhead, and
someone claimed in the comments that he was 1 of 10 heroic, because that is the character that they found by searching for his name on WoWhead on Warcraft logs.
Yeah. So I've only killed one boss in heroic. Eventually, I will get better and work my way up to maybe 2 or 3.
I honestly don't know why we even let you on the podcast.
I don't know. I don't even know anything. I just sort of show up every week. Talk about some crazy lore stuff and then like go back, you know? It's cool. But yes, I will eventually kill more than one heroic boss. Maybe in Chains of Domination, in the Sanctum of Domination, I'll go 2 of 10. I'll get crazy. Double up.
I like it.
I'll double up. God, I'm gonna have to farm a bunch of gold to get that second kill, I think. It's gonna be upsetting.
It's really
no, I mean, I'm gonna have to work on my character and play real well.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'll be doing. But yeah, I think that does it for questions.
Kind of related to that, my guild does sales, so they're doing a heroic sale actually right now because it is Saturday nights while we do the podcast, so I have made 0 gold from it this expansion.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry for not being able to.
We're gonna get up to the point that we can do mythic sales, and then we're gonna sell mythic, and that's obviously gonna be during main raid, and I'll be fine.
Nice.
Definitely not salty about spending way too much gold on leatherworking at the start of the expansion.
You used to be like me and just buy them off the auction house, don't even level it, you know?
Yeah, that wasn't an option on our realm. We imported a guild bank from another realm.
Oh, Jesus.
With legendaries on it. Jesus. Because that was cheaper than finishing leveling it.
That's hilarious. Oh, man. All right. Well, I think that's it for questions, unless we didn't have any in the old Twitch chat. And Lincoln, I do play WoW. It's not a real question. I know it's not, but I do play WoW. I think that's it for Q&A. And I think that's it for the podcast this week. I think this is early. Cleaved.
Imagine not having a 2.5-hour podcast.
I feel like I haven't even worked this week, you know? Gosh. To put more time for sure.
Well, thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and all the other work that we do, you can do that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And as always, if you don't want to or can't contribute financially, you are of course welcome to come and join the Discord and come and hang out. The lounge channels are pretty much always active for each of the specs and have a lot of good people, a lot of friendly faces, and a lot of spicy memes, like Anam being 1 of 10 heroic. But that is going to be it for the show today. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.